I want to start by telling you about a mistake I made during a summer storm about 10 years ago. Because it's the kind of thing that stays with you long after the lights come back on. The power had been out for 6 hours. The house was getting sweltering, and I was in such a hurry to get our window unit running that I pulled the generator right up against the back porch, barely a foot from the sliding glass door. I thought I was being smart by keeping it under the overhang to stay dry. But within 20 minutes, the carbon monoxide detector inside started screaming. I had essentially been funneling exhaust right into our living room. It was a terrifying wake-up call that reminded me that these machines are incredible tools, but they don't have a conscience. They require us to be the ones providing the discipline and the distance. When you're standing there in the dark with a heavy storm rattling the windows, the first thing you feel is a sense of urgency. But the very first thing we have to do is take a breath and find the right spot. You need a flat, stable surface at least 20 feet away from any door, window, or vent. I like to think of it as giving the machine its own little island where it can breathe without sharing that breath with you. If it's raining, you can't just let it sit out in the open because electricity and water have a relationship we want no part of. I use a dedicated generator tent or a clean, open-sided canopy to keep the top dry while letting the air circulate freely around the sides. Before we even think about pulling that starter cord, we need to check the vitals. I always start with the oil. You'll find a small plastic dipstick near the base of the engine. Twist it out, wipe it clean with a rag, thread it back in, and pull it out again. What you're looking for is a clear, honey-colored liquid that hits right at the full mark. If it looks like black coffee or feels gritty between your fingers, that's the engine telling you it's been overworked. If the level is low, add a little bit at a time. These engines don't hold much, so it doesn't take much to overfill them. Once the oil is set, we look at the fuel. You might be thinking that any gasoline will do, but for a machine that might sit for months at a time, fresh fuel is everything. I always use a stabilizer in my gas cans to keep the fuel from turning into a gummy mess that clogs up the carburetor. When you open the fuel cap, you shouldn't smell anything sour or vinegary. If it smells like fresh gas, we're in business. I fill it up, but I never go right to the brim because gasoline expands when it gets warm, and that engine is going to produce a lot of heat once it's humming. Now, we need to talk about the golden rule of portable power, which is never, under any circumstances, plugging your generator into a wall outlet in your house. People call that backfeeding, and it is incredibly dangerous. It can send electricity back out into the utility lines, which can be fatal for the line workers trying to fix the grid. Instead, we are going to use heavy-duty, outdoor-rated extension cords. You'll notice these are much thicker than a standard lamp cord. They have a rugged feel and usually a third prong for grounding. We run these directly from the generator outlets into the house to power exactly what we need, like the fridge or a few lamps. Before we start the engine, make sure nothing is plugged into the generator outlets. We want the motor to find its rhythm before we ask it to do any work. Look for the fuel valve, which is usually a small lever that points down when it's open. Then, find the choke. This is a lever that restricts air to help a cold engine fire up. Slide that to the closed or start position. Flip the main engine switch to on, and you're ready. When you grab that pull handle, don't just yank it with all your might from the get-go. Pull it out slowly until you feel a bit of resistance. That's the engine's piston coming up to the top. Once you feel that tension, give it a smooth, firm, and fast pull all the way through. You'll hear a low rumble and then a steady roar as it catches. As soon as it's running, you'll notice the sound is a bit rough and heavy. That's the choke doing its job. After about 10 or 15 seconds, move the choke lever back to the open or run position. You'll hear the engine tone change from a labored growl to a smooth, high-pitched mechanical purr. That's the sound of success. Let the machine warm up for a couple of minutes. You can actually feel the heat beginning to radiate off the metal housing. This is when we start connecting our loads, and we do it one at a time. I always start with the biggest item first, like the refrigerator. When you plug it in, you'll hear the generator's engine dip in pitch for a second, as it feels the weight of that motor starting up. And then, it will throttle up to handle the demand. Wait for it to stabilize before you plug in the next cord. If you try to dump everything on it at once, you'll likely trip the circuit breaker on the generator panel, and we'll have to start the process over. As the hours go by, you'll need to keep an eye on the fuel level. This is where another common mistake happens. You never want to add gasoline to a generator while it is running or even while it is still hot. If you spill a little bit of gas on a scorching hot muffler, it will ignite instantly. When it's time to refuel, I shut the machine down and let it sit for at least 10 minutes. I use that time to stretch my legs or check the cords for any signs of fraying or heat. Once the metal feels cool enough to touch quickly without burning, then we can pour in the fresh fuel. When the utility power finally flickers back on and the streetlights outside your window start glowing, don't just kill the engine immediately. We want to let the generator wind down. Start by unplugging the extension cords one by one, starting with the smallest items and ending with the largest. Once the generator is running with no load, let it idle for about 3 to 5 minutes. This allows the internal components to cool down evenly while the fan is still spinning. Finally, flip the engine switch to the off position. The roar will die down into a series of clicks and soft mechanical sounds as the metal begins to contract. Close the fuel valve so that no gas leaks into the carburetor while it's sitting in storage. Once the unit is completely cold, I move it back into the garage or shed. I like to keep a log of how long it ran, so I know when the next oil change is due, usually every 50 to 100 hours of use. There's a specific kind of satisfaction that comes from being the person who keeps the household calm and comfortable when the rest of the world is in the dark. It's not just about having the machine. It's about the respect you show it and the steady, methodical way you handle the power it provides. You've done the work, you've kept it safe, and now you can go back inside and enjoy the light.